Today's program has been brought to you by S. Wallace Edwards & Sons, third-generation cure masters producing the country's best dry-cured and aged hams, bacon, and sausage. For more information, visit SurreyFarms.com.
I'm Damon Bolte, host of The Speakeasy. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit HeritageRadioNetwork.org for thousands more.
Welcome to the Food Scene on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. I'm your host, Michael Harlan Turkell, here today with Chickpea Magazine and the woman behind it, Kara Livermore. Thank you.
Hi.
Via Rochester,
yes.
North Bronx today. Long, long two-hour commute on the train.
Yes, it was just
to
pretty
be
good.
Here with us. Thank you so much. It feels like magazine month for me because I had Wild Apple Magazine, a great...
I was listening to it on the way here on my long subway.
That's what podcasts are for. We need more people like you. Wild Apple Magazine, which was gluten-free.
Yeah.
Chickpea Magazine, which is, well, animal-free.
Yeah.
Vegan.
All vegan.
All vegan.
Yeah.
And, you know, I want to kind of reinforce the idea of what veganism is and even what gluten-free is, that they're not necessarily diets. They're not elimination diets. You're not getting rid of something. You're choosing a lifestyle.
Yeah, definitely, especially with veganism, it's like a constant all the time, not just food, but the things that you wear, like the entertainment that you are entertained with.
Yeah. I mean, I wonder that because I felt like there are those two different types of veganism. There's one where it's literally just about food, you know, no animal products, no animal byproducts. But then there's this greater ethos, this ethical veganism, which is literally, you know, no leather. And what kind of vegan entertainment is there?
Well, the thing about entertainment is it's like you don't go to the zoo, you don't go to circuses, just stuff like that. But
puppet shows are okay.
Puppet shows are okay. We went to the Botanical Garden in Brooklyn. That was amazing.
Yeah.
We did that like the day before yesterday.
Yeah. So it literally is an encompassing lifestyle for you.
It's holistic.
Yeah. But you didn't grow up vegan. It was this instant in college. So pre-veganism, what were your eating habits and entertainment outlets?
So I grew up in an extremely poor household. So almost all the meat we had was deer that my dad hunted, which I also got to go on these hunting trips carry around squirrels. And so it was very much like that kind of thing. Jerky that my dad would make, mashed potatoes, like a lot of iceberg salads.
Yeah. I mean, it does. It seems like the 80s, 90s. I mean, this
very much so.
The majority of even supermarket and kind of like, I wouldn't call it off the grid, but non-metropolis cuisine consistent of this.
I had not had a from-scratch cake until after I left college, basically. So I had only had box cakes my entire life. And I was like, why does this new cake taste so different? All of the other cakes taste exactly the same because they're from the same box.
Yeah, yeah. But I mean, that's an interesting, you know, going from that to something that eliminates that completely.
Yeah.
I mean, what were your thoughts growing? Did you not like deer? Did you not like jerky? Or did you enjoy that box cake?
I loved the food that I ate. From a young age, like, just being exposed to, like, the dead animals all the time. Like, that's when it first started. Or, like, when our dog, who lived outside because we had a very small house, like, seeing our dog, like, out in the rain just, like, kind of, like, started this, like, empathy in me that is like kind of what people would say is like to the extreme now of like going completely vegan. Or like the people who my parents are friends with, they think it's so weird and so extreme, but it's like I've actually gotten my dad to cook me tofu.
Yeah.
So it's like it's really cool like how over the years that's changed.
Yeah. Does he still hunt?
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
That's like a thing that has been going on since like my great grandfather, and like it's just like a tradition that it's not like I don't think he'll ever change that.
Yeah, but I mean, he wasn't necessarily sad of your decision to go vegan, but he just didn't understand it at first.
Oh yeah, it's I think that's a lot of what people. That's what happens with a lot of people. It's more confusion than anger. Like even if they act angry, it's all it's like they don't know what it is that I'm doing. It's a misunderstanding, I feel like. And then when I actually like explain to them this is what it is, they're like, well, that's actually not that bad.
Yeah. Well, explain to me what is it and what prompted you to go into this lifestyle?
Well, it was like halfway through college, I decided to go vegetarian. It was mostly like in the dining halls, you would see trash cans full of whole meats that people just throw out, like just completely full garbage bins of meat. And I was like, these animals died for you to throw them in the trash, like that for me. And like the way that I eat was very wasteful. So to me, I felt like kind of a hypocrite for believing like you shouldn't be wasteful. You shouldn't like these animals shouldn't have to like suffer their entire lives for trash, basically. Yeah. So that's what started it. And then I went vegan a little bit after college. It was kind of like I could deal without milk. And from there, it was like I kind of added in like everything else.
Yeah, there are those stages. I too was vegetarian and vegan at a point in college, and I think my parents thought it was a phase.
I didn't
grow out of it. I changed my kind of morals and ideas of food in general, but during that time, you're right, like people were very confused as to how you approach, and I may have been wasteful as well, but I'm glad to see that, like, that aspect of sustainability. Mm,
that's the number one reason why I'm vegan is environment and sustainability.
Yeah.
A lot of people say, like, health, and it's like, you can be really unhealthy as a vegan.
Oh, yeah.
Just as much as you are when you're not vegan.
Tell me about some of the most unhealthy vegan recipes you've encountered, because I know I've seen, like, cookies, like some of the cookie stuff and baking stuff that happens.
The baking stuff is the most over the top, and that's the craziest thing is like vegan baking is actually very easy, and it's very easy to make something ridiculously like decadent. There's a restaurant in Rochester, they make these mac and cheese nachos, which are like, it's like an all vegan restaurant, but it's like vegan cheese sauce, meat sauce, like a green, like pico de gallo, like all of these things. I had it for lunch the other day by myself.
Yeah. No, it's funny because vegetarian like entrees were always like some pasta with a whole bunch of cheese on it.
Lentil loaf with brown rice.
Yeah. But it was never anything. And then it changed to this, like you said, decadence.
Yeah.
Where it's like, look at all these things we can do. And whether or not it was a better educated public of what they can do with vegan ingredients, or just they've been starved so long of that kind of food that they're like, oh, I need it now. I don't know which way it was, but it's definitely been interesting to see that trajectory of things.
I feel like it's like when vegetarianism started, it was like a backlash against like all the decadence of like regular meat culture. So they went like the most natural, like, and this is like in the 70s, like, of course they're going to make lentil loaf.
Yeah.
But I think like as veganism like grows, there's just more different kinds of cultures. Like there are the people who want to do the lentil loaf. So then there's people who want to just make amazing, crazy desserts like all the time. And like, I'm really happy to see like all different facets of these different kinds of foods. I don't know.
Yeah. At a point you said that you eliminated milk. Mm-hmm. And that's another sect of like vegetarianism, the non-dairy or, you know, leading into veganism.
It's like I don't even remember the word.
Yeah, well, there's so many terminologies within. But I was reading a little bit about where veganism started. And it was kind of fascinating because it was, it's been around for a long, long time. You can trace it back to like almost Roman Empire that there are vegans.
Yeah.
You know, there are people that respected the animal, and it wasn't about like, I just don't like meat. No, it was like actually part of their religion not to eat the animal and its byproducts. But it happened in like the mid-40s in the UK, then came over to the US soon thereafter. And like you said, it didn't really catch on. I mean, veganism had a really, really tough time being like this kind of bastard child of vegetarianism.
Well, I think just like people's misperceptions of what it is to be vegan, it like hinders it so much. And I think especially like from the 70s on, when people are talking more openly and like there's more ability to have an open discussion, is when it really like started becoming something new and not just kind of in the background, I guess.
And understanding the products too. I mean, so what is vegan? Soy, plant milks, kind of like almond milks.
See, I don't like eat soy at all. Yeah. It's so funny when people like you say you're vegan and they're like, oh, soy milk, tofu. And it's like, I eat tofu, but soy milk is pretty gross, I think.
Yeah, I don't like a lot of soy milk.
I actually prefer, like, and that's the reason, really, that I started thinking about going vegan is I tried rice milk, and I love that so much more, like, in cereal than regular milk. And I guess it's just the smell of milk, like, it gets really sour very quickly, and I don't like it. But the rice milk, almond milk, coconut milk is, like, amazing.
Yeah. Have you made your own, or do you purchase these?
Yeah, I do make my own because we go through a lot of it for recipe testing and for just in general. So I make my own almond milk because it's really expensive usually.
Yeah.
And then we buy coconut milk like in bulk in like cans.
Yeah.
But
I don't, like bomb shelter, like hoarding for the
next.
Oh
my god, you should see our pantry.
Vegan apocalypse.
Yeah.
So when you say you make these things in bulk too, I think a lot of people are put off initially by the idea of going vegan because they think they have to redo their whole pantry, get all new dry goods, you know, and other things. What do you feel like you need at your house to be vegan?
I actually think it's like not that difficult to switch your pantry over, especially if you're just like replacing things as you run out of them. But the things that like I use the most are the rice milk, just like really cheap, like dry beans that you can like make in a huge batch at the beginning of the week, like canned beans and like just vegetables and fruit. Like,
it's I know it's funny to say vegetables, like people are like, vegetables, those are vegan, those are vegetarian.
And it's like, that's the bulk of what my eating is, is vegetables. And like, people, I feel like a lot of people are definitely going for this vegetable based diet now instead of saying vegan. And they're so similar, like just eating, like starting your meal with vegetables instead of saying like, I'm going to have a huge slab of meat, mashed potatoes and broccoli, like my parents did.
Yeah.
But, so it's like, I'm going to have Brussels sprouts and broccoli, and then I'm going to add some pasta at the end, like a little bit.
Yeah. Well, I think a lot of people's worries too are the elimination aspect of iron, B12, certain nutrients in the diet. But then I just read this book called Paleo Vegan.
Yeah.
Which, you know, the paleo diet's so big right now and relies mainly on, you know, meat broth and those kind of proteins.
Yeah.
So it's fascinating to see that it can easily be done with veganism
as
well.
Yeah, we just reviewed Paleo Vegan for the fall issue, which I forgot to bring.
I read the PDF. I love it.
Yeah.
I'm going to get it in paper too because I'm a hoarder.
Oh my gosh. I forgot the question.
But, you know, it's so easy. That's what I kind of want to, you know, keep on telling people.
You said, what was the word? Elimination.
Yeah.
Which scares so many people. And it's not really about elimination. It's about, kind of replacement and changing your perspective. So, like, you don't... And a lot of people I see that are ex-vegans, they're like, oh, I never had anything to eat. I was so tired. It's like, because you're eliminating and not replacing. I mean, most of the time. I don't really know these people intimately.
Yeah.
But, so, like, instead of just getting rid of meat, like, add in beans, get, like, get the soy replacements, like, replacing what you've always known. Start with, like, tacos. They're easy.
Yeah.
Instead of just, like, trying the lentil loaf, replace your taco meal or replace your pasta meal.
Yeah. You know, it was fascinating talking about elimination, how to supplement through veganism. Iron. You know, a lot of people eat just way too much spinach. And I love spinach, but there's a spinach limit. Lentils, quinoa, like you said, beans, kidney beans, chickpeas, but blackstrap molasses.
Oh, yeah.
I had no idea.
And there's, like, a lot of ways that you can implement these, like, small, like, ingredients that you would never think of using, like, making, like, a vinaigrette with the blackstrap molasses. It's really easy. Like, I think it's, like, what is the word? It's, like, vrgweb.org or something. They have amazing charts that show you, like, here's the best ways to get vegan protein. And it shows you how much protein per, like, what is it, pound or something. And so you can say, here are all the, like, really good ingredients. I'm going to mix them together and make a meal.
Yeah. I mean, I know protein nutrients like peas and rice mm-hmm. are really high. But again, yeah, it's not all egg replacement like it used to be. It used to be like, well, you can't do that vegan unless you take that egg out and put baking powder in.
Yeah.
But that's all it was about for a long, long time.
And you can still do, like, I still do that for baking all the time. I mean, that's just how it is. But it's definitely more, I think about, like, adding in lots of, like, new ingredients that you normally would not.
Excellent. Well, we're actually going to take a break and come back and talk about those college days where you did first start exploring veganism. You've been listening to The Food Scene on heritageradionetwork.org. We'll be right back.
The following program was brought to you by S. Wallace Edwards & Sons. Edwards Suriano hams are aged to perfection for no less than 400 days and hickory smoked to achieve a deep mahogany color. The Edwards name is well known for its world-class aged and cured meats. Their exclusive curing and aging recipe produces a unique flavor profile that enhances the quality characteristics of Berkshire pork. Optimum amounts of pure white fat marbling contribute to a flavor that's a delicate, perfect balance between sweet and salty. For more information, visit edwardsvaham.com.
Hey, and welcome back to The Food Scene on heritageradionetwork.org. Again, your host, Michael Harlan-Turkel, here with Kara Livermore of Chickpea Magazine. Jack, are you looking at me? Because we realized it was the S. Wallace Edwards & Son ham for the vegan magazine.
It's kind of like when the slaughterhouse ad runs on the pet show.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, the thing is, even with all these different ideas about how we feed and nourish ourselves or live our lives, I feel like there are very similar dogmas or mantras about how you go about, you know, building your business, building your brand, and treating people. Mm-hmm. So that's just my little thing about that funny coincidence. But back to veganism.
Yes.
What did you first start cooking for yourself? Because I know it was when you kind of moved off of campus, had an apartment for yourself. And
yes.
What were those dishes?
When I first, when my boyfriend and I, who he also runs the magazine with me, when we first went vegan, we were very lucky, I guess, in that we were moving to our first apartment together and our pantry was completely empty. So we got to build from scratch. So I just picked like my favorite foods from before I went vegan. And I was like, I'm just going to veganize these and it'll taste really good. So the first ones I did were tacos because I eat them almost every single day. And that's really easy. Like once I learned how to cook, it was even better because I had no idea how to cook before I went vegan.
Oh, yeah?
And it totally changed the way I see food completely. Just from learning how to cook and just having to know what are the ingredients in like everything that I had.
Yeah. So, I mean, like turning labels, reading them.
Yeah. I think everyone should know how to like really look at a label and see where is this coming from? What is this?
Yeah. I expect a breakdown in the next issue of Chickpea Magazine about that. But your friends loved your cooking so much that they clamored for you to put together a cookbook.
It was actually, well, like, so we started this new apartment learned how to, we were learning how to cook, and I was like, I want to start a blog because, like, I'm making food, I'm making food so much. So we started this little blog, and when it got to be about 75,000 followers, everyone, like, we got Tumblr messages every single day that was like, why aren't you making a cookbook? And I was like, I don't want to make a cookbook. I wanted to make something, like, a little more fun and open to the people. Like, I felt so grateful for all these people following us that I was like, I want them to be a part of it and not just me be a static thing, like, telling people what to eat, because that's, I don't like that.
Yeah.
But so that's where the magazine grew from.
Yeah, and so on that, Chickpea Magazine is submission-based, so anyone who's listening can actually write into you. And it was through with photographer Valerie Rizzo that I first found out about Chickpea
Valerie
Magazine.
Valerie has worked with us, like, a lot of times.
Yeah, she's wonderful. Her images are great, but the concepts behind the stories are even better.
Yeah.
Because it's not just about pretty pictures. It's about exploring this large world within veganism.
Mm-hmm.
And I really want to talk about this issue, this fall 2014 issue, because aside from it having a small New York centric piece about, you know, where to eat in New York or where chefs, you know, go for vegan cuisine, you go to South Korea.
Yeah, it's all over the place.
You go mushroom foraging.
Yeah.
I mean, you throw potatoes in ashes.
Oh, yeah. That's this girl who has worked with us several times. She is from Poland, I believe, and she always sends us, like, these really authentic recipes, like, every season. I'm like, I'm so happy that you're working with us.
Yeah.
But it's about this, like, well, you'll have to read it in the magazine.
No, but it's such a cute, more than cute, I mean, it's a really loving story.
Yeah.
And, but on that, with those different subjects, there's so much flavor to everything. And I love that this issue starts out with spices.
Yeah.
Literally, you know, cold weather, or as I better know them as, warming spices.
Yeah.
And, you know, sometimes vegan food gets the humdrum of
bland.
It being, yeah, exactly. But you can utilize these things, and you also have shrubs in this issue.
Mm-hmm. Which I was so excited about.
Yeah, which is both ends of the spectrum, having warming spices and then having, you know, tangy, acetic shrubs.
I've never tried shrubs before, and then I worked so much on putting that, like, bringing that together. The girl who wrote it obviously put it together, but when we were testing the recipes, and we have, like, an open studio party, like, every month, and gave out all these cupcakes, the recipes that were in the article, and they were so amazing. I was surprised that vinegar can do so much.
Don't get me on vinegar. I'm kind of an acid freak, but we'll talk about that afterwards. But I want to go back to these cold weather spices.
Yes.
I mean, most of us have these in our pantry. Allspice, cardamom, cinnamon. It's the one that always gets me. Cloves, coriander, ginger, mace, nutmeg, peppercorn.
Mm-hmm.
And we think about these things separately. I guess in this season we start thinking about, you know, pumpkin pie spice.
Yes.
But you bring up the ideas of, well, not ideas. It happens in chai tea,
mm-hmm.
jerk seasoning. I mean, like, the multicultural nature of these warming spices aren't limited to, you know, hot cocoa.
Yeah, and I think, like, the way that we try to focus these articles is kind of like a, what is the word, trying to be inclusive and, like, giving this magazine to not just vegans but to other people who can see the value in, like, figuring out, like, how these spices work for not just vegan dishes but, like, any kind of dishes.
I mean, you do garam masala. I mean, you touch on Indian cuisine in that way.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's so global. In a sense, it's not like this weird little commune that hangs out in Rochester, New York.
Yeah, we try to, like, show that veganism isn't just, like, this weird thing that happens, like, to hippies or, like, people online. It's, like, there are cultures around the world that, like, bring together, like, or bolster this vegan movement. Like, we're not just making things up. We're getting this from other cultures.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about mushroom foraging, too, because There's a part in the beginning where you're doing some, like, tofu scrambles with, you know, whatever, chanterelles and porcini something. But then there's another piece about, you know, mushrooms in a lot of Asian cuisine and culture.
Yes, I loved reading that article. It was great.
Yeah. I love how giddy you are about your own magazine. Because that's the sign of somebody who's actually really enjoying what they're doing.
Yeah, I I love the quality of what people are bringing us. And like this fall issue, I was so happy with it because it went so in depth. It was the longest issue we ever put together. And like there were so many like just stories and like research that like we haven't had this caliber yet. Like I'm very excited to see like the next issue.
Yeah.
Myself.
Well, I'm excited to submit. You had my mind just kind of whirring the other day when I was reading through the PDF of, you know, all these ideas that I never kind of put underneath the umbrella of veganism.
Yeah.
That I know are vegan, but
because people think veganism is restrictive or something like that, but it's not. It's like it's still using all the ingredients that the world has to offer.
Yeah.
Just like in a different way. And like the creativity that you have to be vegan and to like see in this culture of veganism is like this huge thing that no one really sees unless they're in it, I guess.
Yeah. Well, let's tell people about where they, if they're scared of cooking this themselves at first, where to go, because there's a great piece in, you know, this issue about where to eat in New York. And one's right down the street from me, MOB.
Yes.
Yeah. Maimonides of Brooklyn, I believe.
Yes. And that article ended up being almost 40 pages because it was so, it was like restaurants that I've been to about half of them. And luckily we had two people who live in New York who like know these places really well. And like they got to go interview them. But those, oh my gosh, those, places actually I'm gonna go to Beyond Sushi later today,
yeah.
I believe, because like the way that these people are writing about them like really makes you want to like try something new, I guess.
Tell me a little, that's in Chelsea Market and I've never been.
Yeah,
but tell me a little bit about what makes Beyond Sushi special and vegan.
Oh well, I believe that they started out vegetarian and then they only had like two mayonnaise-based sauces, so they're like, we'll just be vegan, and it's no big deal. But they make sushi that's not just like an avocado roll. They make like real like statement pieces of sushi that you could see at like any high-caliber restaurant. They're not just like veganizing a recipe. They're really like celebrating the flavors that they put together.
Yeah, and I mean, it's using different grains. It's using, yes, you know, interesting tofus, because there's a range of those too.
Yeah,
and, I mean, I thought it was fat, and that's a place that I really want to get to. I remember first moving to New York and going to, you know, like Pure Food and Wine, and, you know, even Angelica's, which is more vegetarian, I believe, or is it fully vegan?
I'm not sure. I haven't been to Angelica's, but I believe it's, I mean, I know it's at least vegetarian.
Yeah. And within vegetarian, often you can find vegan.
Or it's like, if you see a vegetarian, if it, the restaurant says vegetarian, it's often very easy to veganize something, or like you just ask and they'll do it kind of thing.
I was actually excited to know, Pauly G's is a favorite pizza place of mine, that they have a vegan pizza there with cashew cheese.
There's a lot of vegan pizza in New York.
Oh, yeah?
We have no, I mean, in Rochester, there are a couple restaurants that are almost all vegan, but there is no vegan pizza.
Yeah. Another wonderful thing was Bunna, the Ethiopian kind
yes,
of pop-up.
Yes, I was so, like, happy to be introduced to that because it was such an interesting, like, it's an interesting concept. It's like a coffee culture and Ethiopian food. Like, it's really interesting to me.
And you talk about something that has all those spices from, you know, those cold weather spice, you know, pantries, to having the acidity of shrubs, because the injera, the bread, has you know, that long fermentation thing.
Oh, now I want to go there. Yeah. I know it's close to here.
Yeah. I mean, what else is on your list? You must be, after that long trek, you know, downstate.
I know.
Where else do you want to go in New York?
Oh, my gosh. I wish I had the article out in front of me, because then I could just check off the list.
Yeah. You should do a little perforated check-off list. And,
oh, my God. That's a good idea.
Well, you know, before we wrap up, I actually want to talk about the craft of the magazine is amazing, because I believe it's your own website that says you do food and lifestyle photography. I mean, hold on. Let me find this, because it's so many things. I mean, you are a Renaissance woman in that sense. Illustration, of course, which you went to school for.
Yes.
Screen to print, hand lettering.
Yes.
And this magazine has it all. I mean, were you surprised that you were able to use all those skills within, you know, bound?
I made the magazine from the skills that I had.
Yeah.
So I worked so hard to get it to look the way that it does, from the paper to the design to like all the elements of it. like just the paper itself, we've been working on since the beginning. We just got this paper quality like last year.
Yeah, what is this paper?
Well, it's an offset like matte. I can't remember the process of it, but it's like this really smooth matte paper that's kind of thick. It's like really nice to hold on to, and it's like, it's actually like cheaper than the glossy magazines to print, which
believe
is
me, I worked
crazy.
For Edible magazines for 5 years. It was that same, you know, like you said, very tactile thing, mm-hmm. and it felt archival when you had it in your hand. And you can ask my wife, I've not gotten rid of any issues. It's all just stacked up in our house.
Well, that's like one of the reasons I made the magazine was like, I was sick of seeing these like throwaway magazines. I was like, how much waste has to go on to like make these magazines? And then after we started producing the magazine and selling it to stores, we learned that stores, well, not it's not the store's fault, but they throw away the glossy magazines or they rip the covers off. And then they send the covers back to the magazine producer, and that's how they get their money back. So they throw away all these magazines.
I totally forgot about that. I've seen that for like newspapers for years.
And so one store did that to our magazine, and I was like, that's not how it's going to work because it's not a dollar magazine.
Yeah. I mean, we go back to that whole idea of sustainability and you not wanting waste. You want these to exist in the world in a way that kind of parlays itself to having other people understand not to be wasteful and to be mindful of what they eat. I know you get tons of submissions. Do you get people writing in, you know, thanking you for the magazine, telling you what an inspiration? And
We get that like pretty often, actually, which like surprises me, and I'm like immediately like, they must be lying. But we do a lot of like in-person shows, and there is like people who like buy like 2 subscriptions in every magazine that we have, and it's like crazy to me that people like actually believe in like something that I made.
Yeah, well, I actually want to give another shout out because I also saw your magazine at Food Book Fair, which I'm a part of, and I love what Elizabeth has done. And she actually just launched Foodioticals today, foodioticals.com.
Yeah, I saw that actually like on Instagram. I was like, oh, that's cool.
Yeah, so Chickpea Magazine is on there and has long been a participant of Food
that
Book
is
Fair.
Like one of my, it's probably my favorite show to go to. And it's like you see the quality of our magazine and then like people like way on another level of like bound books almost, but their magazines but and they're all in one place.
Even the ladies of Wild Apple last show said, oh, we met Kara during Food
really?
Book Fair, Chickpea. But that there's a community within the food magazine, food zine, foodie article industry that is so genuine and supportive, even though one might be all about, you know, game and jerky.
Yeah. and then we were sitting next to Modern Farmer, I think last year, not this year, but last year. And it's like, but you're still going to like be friends with these people because they're doing exactly what you're doing. And for the most part, your ideals are like on the same level. It's just a different application of it. So
here's to the greater good. Thank you so much for being on chickpeamagazine.com. Check out, you know, Kara's personal work as well. She's a fantastic photographer, illustrator, et cetera. And annoy the crap out of her. Send her as many submissions as you want because we just want to see this magazine get bigger and better every day. Thank you for being on.
Thank you.
You've been listening to The Food Scene on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. I'm your host, Michael Harlan Turkel. Hoping to have you back here next Tuesday at 3. Cheers.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archive programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.